Welcome to the 248th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome and thank you for listening. I hope you're surviving the COVID quarantine the best that you can. I hope you're safe and healthy. I hope you're eating plant-based. I hope you're getting outside and getting some sun. You know, right up front, vitamin D levels help boost your immunity, and there's no better way to get vitamin D than the sun. The reality of it is taking vitamin D pills has never shown to be a benefit in anyone, so get out and get some sun. You don't have to get a sunburn. I am not advocating that people get a sunburn, but go out and get 15 minutes of sun today. It was great when I was driving in to work today to see people out walking, again, practicing social distancing, but also getting out and getting their exercise and walking. So that, you know, good things come out of bad situations. And one thing that's coming out of COVID is I think people are becoming more active. If you can't get to a gym, it's even better to be outside, in my opinion. So you can get outside and do your bike walk, any other exercise equipment that you have. And, body weight workouts, light workouts. My son-in-law has been doing gym workouts in his garage with, you know, sand buckets. Even yard work can be a good workout, carrying some mulch and, digging and getting your garden ready. So, you know, don't be afraid to get outside and get some sun. It's the best way to boost your vitamin D level. As we always start this podcast, I always tell you a little bit about my endurance activities that are going on. Right now, they're not very good. I just told you to go outside and get exercise, and I'm struggling a little bit. I'm going out and getting a little walk in, but I'm injured. Overuse injury, it happens. It's a bit of a, I believe, somewhere along the L5, psoas injury, tightness, imbalance, something that's causing some pain in my right hip. It's getting better, doing stretching, a little bit of stretching, more glute training to try to get myself back in action. I felt it coming on, I ignored it, I kept running, you know, doing more and more, just like I tell other people not to do. So it's been a little bit of a struggle because running is my favorite thing to do, so I'm kind of climbing the walls a little bit. But again, I have to make something good out of something not so good. So I'm using it to focus on my imbalances that caused this problem in the first place. Basically some, you know, again, glute training, some balance, some core stability type exercises, and just work on weight training, things that don't hurt. You know, just because one body part is bad doesn't mean the other ones, you know, can't be used. So I'm doing what I can with what I've got, and I'll get better because of it. Still getting outside and walking my dogs a little bit. It's funny, Gretchen, my youngest dog, is the one that runs with me most, and she is really not real happy about walking instead of running. Samantha, on the other hand, who is older and has some arthritis herself, is very happy that we're walking slow, and it's sometimes she's even beating me. So we're working on it. If you're a owner of our cookbook, you know that Addie Delaney Minor, which is my registered dietitian and daughter, and, you know, the diva is my mother. The diva has been quarantined as well because she's going to be 87 years old. And she has some health complications. You wouldn't really recognize it from the outside. But enough that she, being in the 80 category, she's left to only golf. She's doing her social distancing by riding in her own golf cart and cleaning her golf cart. She's not eating at the club or anything. But she's also working on her endurance, so she's been actually starting to run, walk, and jog, and I posted a little bit of things of the diva running in the driveway. She's also been on my Razor scooter practicing her balance. She is wearing a helmet now. Addie is 33 weeks pregnant. It's hard for me to keep track. I just know that the due date of Caleb James is May 19th. But anyway, she is still walk running and doing her strength training exercises. And, you know, she's had to cut back and she's not doing what she did before. She's had to make adjustments. And I guess that's the bottom line, is we all have to make adjustments and make the best of it. We did a conference last Saturday and Karen Hartglass was one of the speakers. And one of the great things that she said was, "I'm lucky because." And that really resonated with me, because I think at this time, with all the things going on, we have to take time and say, you know, you could certainly substitute "I'm grateful because," but "I'm lucky because." and, you know, and list the things that are good, because the negative, you know, negative thoughts keep creeping in. You know, there's a lot of negatives that go around with this virus. What caused it? Who caused it? What's not being done? You know, all the bad things that, you know, that we're having to deal with. But I think that we have to take time and say, I'm lucky because. And, you know, I do think that this virus, you know, is going to have some really good outcomes from it, and that perhaps people are going to start to choose better nutrition and focus on their immune building, not only with vitamin C, yes, from citrus fruits and peppers and tomatoes, but also vitamin D from the sun, antioxidants, and basically everything that comes from plants. You all know it, that are plant-based. If you're new to this, you know, getting the oils out of your diet is going to decrease inflammation. Getting the animal products out of your diet is going to decrease inflammation. Getting the dairy out of your diet is going to decrease mucus production. But again, the positives, getting bright, colorful vegetables and fruits in. If you're immunocompromised and worried about vegetables being tainted in the grocery store, somebody spitting on the vegetables before you get there, certainly washing them, you know, things that have a peeling, you're peeling them off is a good thing. Frozen when you can, frozen fruits sub in. I know down here in Florida, we're seeing shortages of just plain frozen vegetables in some things. But, you know, sub in where you can, buy fresh. You know, you can always freeze them. You can cook them in freezing. Certainly cooking your vegetables to a high degree. If you're immunocompromised, meaning you've had chemotherapy or, you know, you have a disease that might put you at risk for eating raw fruits and vegetables, then cook them, freeze them, can them, store them that way as a way to get around all of this. You know, back to what's going on outside for me, you know, it's spring season in Florida. We have tomatoes that are growing nicely, some hot peppers, eggplant on my tower garden, parsley, cilantro, basil. We have mangoes on four of our trees. We have two avocado trees that now have little avocados on, and papaya, a tree that has some papayas on it. So it's nice to go out in the yard and look at those things. I've got these collard plants that are actually going on a year old that continue to produce really well. So that's exciting. Inside, I'm doing my microgreens with broccoli and arugula and pea sprouts, some mustard seeds. So that's all fun to keep watching those grow. And I think that, again, I've said it before, not a broken record, I hope, too much, but, you know, it's a good project for the kids to start microgreens and start to grow things from seeds. You can get the little starter kits and grow things and plant them outside. There's something to be said for going outside. There's a thing called earthing. Our bodies and how they work, we have, you know, things that turn proteins on and turn proteins off. Different chemicals work in our body. And a lot of times when something's wrong with us, if we have diabetes, we think about, you know, the receptors aren't working in our muscle cells. If we have arthritis, we think that there's, you know, we look at an immune complex that is attacking our joints. But there's also something to be said about just the positive and negative charges that our body has. And, you know, it does make you feel better when you get outside, and it can make you feel even better if you're, you know, come in contact with the earth. And there's a charge out there, just like, you know, you get good vibes from people. That's kind of good positive energy. You get positive energy from the ground too, and from plants and dirt. So get out and get some positive energy. And again, it's a good reason to start a garden and get out and dig in the dirt. Nothing else, just get some of the weeds to go away, and get your in your daily walk. You know, when we talk about diabetes, a lot of times people think that if their glucose numbers are under control, despite being on medications, that morning number's okay, that they're, you know, out of the woods, and they really don't, you know, their diabetes is, you know, well controlled. And there's, you know, when we're documenting in charts, we talk about poorly controlled diabetes, well controlled diabetes. You know, we look at the hemoglobin A1C, and, you know, different people will accept whether a hemoglobin A1C of a certain number is good versus a bad. And we know by that hemoglobin A1C number, which is the number, the percentages of the hemoglobin molecule that's covered in glucose, you know, how much glucose is in the bloodstream on average, you know, over the 24-hour period. And that hemoglobin lasts for about 3 months, you know, before it gets replaced with new red blood cells. So we can That hemoglobin A1C percentage kind of gives us an average of what glucose was in people's bloodstream. But if it's still above normal, that means that you have elevated insulin levels. And if your insulin levels are elevated, that also means that you have these other chemicals in your blood that's in excess, insulin-like growth factor that promotes the division of cells, which you might think of as cancer cells. It also promotes the growth of endothelial cells, which can cause, you know, again, more cellular increase in the plaque formation so that the blood vessel narrowing start to grow or thicken. So, you know, growth in kind of all the wrong places with insulin-like growth factor once you're an adult. The other thing that it turns on are interleukins, which it turns on our immune system, but not in a positive way that protects us, but in a way that, you know, we have people running around, just like, you know, people have said that part of the treatment with the coronavirus is that we're focusing on all the wrong people. We should be protecting our elderly much more and not focusing so much on younger population and you know, how we're directing things. And that's like the immune system with diabetes. It's turned on and it's just going everywhere. There's no real good direction. So we have inflammation in the joints, inflammation in the heart, in the vasculature, but it's not really directed at necessarily killing an invading organism. So when you're when you have diabetes, the higher that your insulin levels are, the more at risk you are towards these infections. And there are bacteria and viruses around. Just because COVID is the scariest one doesn't mean that a pneumococcal pneumonia can't really hurt people. And in fact, you know, most of our deaths from influenza in the hospital are from secondary infections, secondary bacterial infections. So we need to protect ourselves in times of COVID and times of not COVID to be able to regulate the harmful bacteria, or at least the, I guess, our bacterial communities. We know people that have diabetes tend to have worse problems with fungal infection in their feet. They have worse problems with skin infection and rashes. They're much more susceptible to wound infections. And that's because there is an abnormal balance of microbes in people that have diabetes, and it's largely because of their immune system. So that's why, again, with this COVID virus, that, you know, diabetics are at risk, even if they appear to be healthy diabetics. And, you know, what a better time to reverse diabetes than now? You know, going out to eat is limited. Social interaction is limited. A lot of people tell me that that's the reason why they're overweight, is they socially go out to eat a lot of times. So now we're not doing that. So you're at home. So now the reason to get takeout food is because you don't want to cook, but you're not pressured by anybody. So now you can really pick and choose and get your takeout food, if you're going to do it, from those restaurants that cater to healthy nutrition. So this is not the time for fast food, in my opinion, or is there any time, but it's a time to really look at your nutrition. And are you getting, you know, your 5-6 servings of fruits a day? Are you getting 5 cups of greens a day? Are you getting, you know, 50 to 80 grams of fiber a day? I think sometimes, you know, I know Dr. Greger talks about the daily dozen and things, you know, a checklist. But I think we can also drive ourselves crazy a little bit if we're looking for, you know, the real checklist or actually measuring everything. I think, you know, looking at your plate every time you sit down. So if you have 3 meals a day, look down and look at your plate. Are the colors all there? You know, do you have some greens and some reds and some purples and blues on your plate? Do you have whole grains? You know, that's a good checklist. You don't have to measure anything. You can just, you know, keep count. But if you're getting things from a mix or a box, then, you know, that's a negative. That's in your negative column. The other thing that I see people have trouble with in my practice is sauces. We all want to put something on our food. You know, we grew up with cheese sauce on broccoli or cauliflower or macaroni and cheese. So we're always, you know, and sauces are good. You know, I love sauces on my food. It, you know, my favorite dish growing up was, you know, spaghetti sauce, a tomato sauce. I've changed. You know, if you buy a marinara sauce in the grocery store, there's really, you know, other than Engine 2 and maybe one or two other ones that you really have to look high and low for, they all have oils added into them. So they can be, if you do the calculation, up to 30% oil. And you'll say, well, no, it only said it had 3 grams of fat in the servings by weight in the serving size. You can't look at that. You have to look at, one, the calories per serving. So let's say the calories per serving were 200. And then you look at the total fat and say that was 2 grams of fat. So 2 grams, there's 9 calories per gram. So 9 times 2 is 18. So 18 out of 200 calories were fat. And then you divide that to get the percentage. So if it was 20%, that would be 10% fat. Not too bad. But most of the time, these sauces tend to be, you know, 45, 50% fat when you do the math on a lot of these. And especially sauces that, you know, some sauces have cashews in them, you know, in the sauces that come. So those can be really, really fatty. And that's going to contribute not only a lot of calories, but it's going to make diabetes control worse. Because, again, if you're eating something with fat in it, that fat's going to block the uptake of glucose into your muscle cell. The receptors are already in trouble because of fat that's in the muscle, but when you eat fat, it adds it on top of it. So I like to think of it as a drain. And the drain is being clogged with fat that you eat, as well as fat once it gets down into the bottom of the drain. So you have to really watch those sauces. So one of the sauces that I made this week, and you know, was a kind of aha moment for me, was looking at, and it's really one of my favorites, a Momo sauce, and it's with hot peppers. I use poblano peppers and one Thai chili pepper, and then tomatoes. And then I use spices like garam masala and some turmeric and some cardamom. And it made a wonderful sauce that I put over top of vegetables. And so you look at that sauce, and it's, you know, so tomatoes, vitamin C, leucopene, great for, you know, vitamin A, vitamin C, you know, B vitamins, the peppers, you know, I use the red pepper and the poblano peppers, green pepper. So again, vitamin C, you could put in yellow peppers again to get more beta carotene. You could even throw carrot in to get some, you know, more beta carotene type of nutrients in, but yet all of those are very low calorie, so it's not calorie dense. So I'm not adding a lot of calories to my vegetables. You know, a head of cauliflower doesn't have many calories. It's like 30, 40 calories per cup, something like that. So, I mean, you could eat a whole head of cauliflower, but if you put cheese sauce on it, then you could also all of a sudden make that cup of cauliflower 250, 300 calories. If people put oil on it and roasted it first and then put that sauce on it, you can see how you can make it 500 or 600 calories. We don't think about that. If you buy something from the store that's breaded, it was breaded at the factory and deep fried. The breading contains high fructose corn syrup. So anything that you purchase in a box that's breaded has high fructose corn syrup. It was already oiled and fried at the factory. And then say it came to a fast food restaurant, they would dip it in oil and would flash fry it again. So you're getting all that oil, and that's where all this calories density comes from in these foods. So when you're trying to lose weight or trying to get your diabetes under control, you have to be really diligent about where the fat's coming. Crackers are the same way. People say, well, I have to have a cracker. I have my crackers and snacks. Even it's a cracker made from seeds and nuts, that cracker still has oil in it that's still going to be calorie dense, still going to block the fat receptors. And then typically people put something like a spread, like a hummus. If you buy hummus, again, all the hummuses that you buy commercially, except a few, have oil added. You have to look at the ingredients. It's spread out. There may be a couple different oils spread out through the paragraph of ingredients. So you're better off to make your own hummus. But then, again, when you look at something that you're going to put on a cracker, you took a bunch of beans and you put them in the blender, and even if you make it at home, which is much less calorically dense than the one you buy, you're still making it calorically dense. So if you're using those things all the time, it can be why your weight is plateauing, or that you're not losing any weight, or that your cholesterol is still going up, again, or your diabetes control is not getting any better because you have caloric density and you have an increased fat in the diet. I had someone tell me about a solid cake. You know, growing up, if somebody said they're solid, that was, kind of another name for they're pretty heavy. And so the solid cake was a Betty Crocker cake mix with a few vegetables cooked inside of it. So, some food processed carrots and celery and some greens, and then put that into a Betty Crocker cake. If you look in the ingredients of a Betty Crocker cake mix, here goes. Enriched flour, bleached. Sugar, corn syrup, baking soda, sodium aluminum phosphate, cocoa, if it's a chocolate cake, corn starch, modified corn starch, palm oil, propylene glycol, mono and diesters of fatty acids, distilled monoglycerides, salt, dicalcium phosphate, sodium stearyl, lactate, xanthan gum, cellulose gum, and artificial flavor. So if you look back to that, as far as calorie density, the palm oil, obviously we're stripping our forest of palm, and that's causing a lot of deforestation. Try to stay away from anything that has palm oil, if nothing else from an environmental aspect. And when you look at diesters and fatty acids and monoglycerides, these are just other names for fat. If we look at the nutrition label of the Betty Crocker, again, we have calories from fat, 15 out of 160 calories per serving, and there's 10 servings in a Betty Crocker cake mix. And, of course, prepared when you do the oil, like in the eggs that they say, which I don't know whether this solid cake had that or not. I assume that the oil was probably going to still be there. 130 out of 280. So roughly that would be 260 if we doubled. So basically if you bake a Betty Crocker cake, the calories from fat is almost, it's 45% essentially. 130 divided by 280. So if you actually do the math, it's 46%. So you can see that, that's not a dessert that we're looking for. I am going to give you a tip. If you're making a birthday cake or a cake for a special occasion, skip all the, cake mixes. They're full of chemicals. All you need to do is use a bread flour or a pastry flour or a whole wheat flour even. It's going to be a little dense, more dense. A thing of applesauce or a little container of baby prunes pureed. I've even used my Clif, the pouches that you get, the Peter Rabbit Clif. Clif makes them, but Peter Rabbit makes pouches for little kids that have applesauce or beets or carrots. You can use any of those as a thickener. And then I use white vinegar and baking soda. It makes a wonderfully fluffy cake for a special occasion. So stay away from the cake mixes. It's only things that you don't need and chemicals that you don't need and contributes to your metabolic waste. But the most part, do fruit as a dessert. You're going to up your nutrient density by doing fruit variety of, whether it's frozen, combination, frozen or and unthawed or, however you have to do it. But that's a much better dessert to have after your meal. I was checking out the grocery store this week, and our grocery store had yellow dragon fruit, and they're one of my favorites. I'm not real fond of the white ones. I like the red ones okay, but yellow dragon fruit I love. And they're usually very expensive, but I consider fruit as a health food to me. It's good for my immune system, and plus I use the seeds, add a few seeds to plant my own. And so I had the dragon fruit, and I'm checking out, and the girl packing the grocery said, while I've never seen a yellow dragon fruit. I bet they make good smoothies. And it's like, no, not at that price. So fruit's expensive. That's another reason, not to keep throwing fruit in a blender. Enjoy it. I like different kinds of fruit chopped up. Growing up, you had a banana or an apple or some peaches. You never had it mixed up. And this morning for my breakfast, I had mango, some of that yellow dragon fruit, papaya, and some blueberries. you know, made for a great breakfast in my tablespoon of chia seeds. So, you know, it's a great breakfast and enjoy it, you know, because then you start to get the taste and you really can taste the sweetness and that helps your sweet tooth go away. A question that comes up over and over again is if I'm getting enough protein. You know, the simple, cynical answer is, you know, do horses get enough protein? My nurse has a horse, and we figured out one day that he eats 28,000 calories, and it comes from oats. You know, and so he's not having a meat source. You know, herbivores don't have a meat source, and they don't die of protein malnutrition. Well, your friends may say you're not a horse. So let's go through things. And what exactly is a protein? You know, when we think protein, we think muscle, and we think bodybuilder and, you know, some, you know, muscle-ripped person. But proteins are also building blocks for enzymes that help us in digestion and metabolism. You know, the proteins basically work our body. I heard it described as, you know, we have a cog and wheel, and you know, part of the cog and the wheel is a protein and the receptors, and even the receptors are made out of protein. So everything in our body that moves and turned on is activated by some sort of protein. We have, you know, there's muscle even in our blood vessels that are made up of proteins, muscle in our heart, muscle in our kidneys. You know, there are proteins everywhere in our body. We also recycle those proteins. And if you take a protein and you break it down, the next layer is a peptide, which are, you know, pieces. And then amino acids are the basic building blocks. So if you look at our cell and the DNA in our cell, the DNA code for the proteins. Our genes code for proteins that turn things on, turn things off, and become things, whether they become eye or skeletal muscle or heart. But our body, as we break the different cells down, we have this pool of amino acids that get recycled into more proteins. So we're always recycling. We're not getting rid of a tremendous amount of protein every day. It's not like, you know, carbohydrate where we burn it off and it goes down to carbon, it goes down to glucose, water, and carbon dioxide, and it's, you know, all gone. And we only store about 2,000 calories of carbohydrate. We have abundant protein in our body. Our body is a protein being for the most part, made up of these amino acids that are just constantly getting recycled back and forth. So we don't need to take in protein every day because we keep it. So that's the main thing. And so if we have 10% of our calories from protein, then that just basically tops off the wear and tear. If you get a blood test, it measures BUN and creatinine as part of a basic metabolic profile. The blood urea nitrogen is a reflection of the protein that's being broken down in your body. So if you were to fall down a flight of stairs and you have this tremendous muscle injury, and we look at, and then you laid there, and we did a blood test, we would see an elevation in your BUN as the muscle was broken down. We would also see an elevation in, you know, in the protein that's released into your bloodstream because of broken down muscle. But day to day, that BUN is a very low number, and it's reflected. It's lower in women than in men because men have more muscle mass than women. But the normal number is, you know, something around 10 milligrams per deciliter. So we break down very little nitrogen every day. And that's how people back in the 1860, when they did the experiments measuring nitrogen through the urine, how they figured out how much nitrogen people lose during the day. And so again, we'd only need 10% of our calories from protein. Now let's look at the protein. People talk about, is it a complete protein? A complete protein is the same percentage of amino acids, essential amino acids, that's in human muscle. That's what a complete protein is called. way back in the day, which people have hung on to, they used to think that you had to have a complete protein or it wasn't good enough. But again, we don't lose all those essential amino acids every day. They're recycled. We just need to top them off. So you can top them off with any source. So a banana has all of the essential amino acids, just not in the same amount. So if you eat 2,000 calories worth of bananas, and a banana is about a gram of protein, you're going to end up getting enough of all your essential amino acids, even from bananas. That's people have been on TV. You know, if you eat all potatoes, it's going to be a boring diet. You can get all your essential amino acids. It comes in all these foods. Only plants fix nitrogen. So plants are the biggest makers of our precursors for amino acids and proteins. That's where the animal gets it. Then you eat the animal. So it's just eating, you know, it's a middle source. It's like getting takeout when you eat animal protein. You know, you don't have to cook it. You don't have to put it, it's already there. So the 9 essential amino acids are in food, just not in the same percentages in all foods as they are in animal muscle foods. Now let's look at the amino acids that are in animal muscle foods that we may not want. We know that if people eat greater than 10% of their calories, especially from animal protein, the risk of cancer goes up. And some of the amino acids are better for us than others. Methionine, the branched chain amino acids, leucine, isoleucine, and valine, they all cause a rise in target of rapamycin, which is building. It tells our cells to, hey, reproduce, make more cells, which is great if you want to put on muscle and build muscle. But it also has the detriment of making us live less long. So especially in an adult that's not putting on a tremendous amount of muscle, we're just turning on cellular production. And people that have elevated levels of target of rapamycin have increased levels of cancer, such as breast cancer and prostate cancer. People that live to be 100 tend to have low levels of target of rapamycin. If you fast, your levels of target of rapamycin will go down. If you eat a lot of vegetables and plant-based diet, your levels of target of rapamycin go down. So it's actually turns on, when you have low levels of target of rapamycin, you're actually turning on your longevity genes to make yourself last longer, to repair cellular function. But if you have high levels of this methionine, branched chain amino acids, which are common in animal in proteins that they sell and protein shakes and all that kind of stuff, you're getting more of something that you don't need of to start with. So protein powders give people excess amount of protein that they didn't need, plus they're giving them extra amino acids in those proteins that are actually more harmful for them. I think the biggest problem is that most people that aren't plant-based don't realize that other foods have protein. The only thing they think has proteins are beans, and a lot of people think nuts and seeds are a good source of protein, and they're really not. They're 85% fat. And so, yes, there's some protein in nuts and seeds, but you get more fat than protein. That's not really a good source to look at as protein. So, you know, again, if we're looking at 10% of our total calories, you don't have to worry what you eat. Fruits and vegetables are going to have plenty of protein. You don't have to worry about concentrated sources. Certainly grains and beans have a more concentrated source. They have a higher percentage of protein. But it's not essential. So I had a lady in this week, and she heard about the practice, wants to get healthy, but doesn't like to cook, and said she didn't like any vegetables at all. And so we went through, and it wasn't true. She liked all fruit. She liked potatoes, both sweet, white, purple, yellow. She liked green beans. She liked broccoli. She liked cabbage, tomatoes, cucumbers, carrots, cauliflower. She liked most of those broccoli and the cauliflower and carrots raw but not cooked. And I suggested that she just never had them prepared in a way that she really liked, because, you know, people say it's a texture, but if you lightly steam broccoli and, you know, put some seasoning on it, it's the texture's not much different. You know, people tend to have had really overcooked mushy vegetables as a kid, and I think that's what turned them off. But anyway, so even if she says she hated all kinds of beans, so she hates beans, and she hated tofu. She made all kind. You know, I could see her. We FaceTimed, so I could see her face. And she, like, really squinched it up when we talked tofu. She said her daughter-in-law, and I don't know that she likes her daughter-in-law either, to tell you the truth, but her daughter-in-law was a vegetarian, and she'd had tofu there once, and she thinks, and she couldn't, and she didn't like it. So would that lady get enough protein if she didn't eat beans? So could she be, you know, was she going to be a plant-based flunky because she couldn't survive without eating beans? So let's look at it. My breakfast, again, I usually do fruit and chia seeds, and so I do a lot of fruit. So, but if I did four fruits and chia seeds, that would be 10 grams of protein. If somebody did a cup of oatmeal, that'd be another 4 grams of protein. So let's say breakfast on average, if you had half a cup of protein, you get 14 grams of protein there, just with fruit, chia seeds, and some oatmeal. Go right to lunch. We're going to have kale. You know, we're going to have our 3 to 4 cups of greens like we want every day. We're going to have 2 or 3 vegetables, peppers, cucumbers, tomatoes, and then we're going to have brown rice. We're up to 15 grams easy of protein in that. Kale, 4 cups, 8 grams of protein. Each cup of vegetable or each, you know, like a pepper would be about 2 grams of, if you ate the whole pepper, which I do, a whole cucumber, 2 grams of protein. And then you did a cup of rice, just nothing else, and that gets you 4 grams of protein. So there's another 15 grams of protein for lunch. And let's move on to dinner. Let's have a cup of pasta. That's 8 grams of protein. Add your 3 vegetables in. That's 6 grams of protein. Maybe some more greens. And at least easy got 15 grams of protein. So 45 grams of protein without really even pushing it at all. And this was a woman that was 5'3", so that's plenty of protein for her today without even touching a bean. Now, I suggested that she learn to eat beans because, again, I believe it's just you haven't had them prepared in a way that you like them. So I suggested, and you can do this with your children, is that she have a tablespoon of beans on her baked potato with fresh salsa. And so that she's actually mixing those beans in with some sauce, so is salsa, and that she's learning the texture of beans. You know, I can see it if you don't like the texture of a worm or you don't like the texture of a grasshopper. You know, to me that sounds gross. But a poor, innocent bean, I mean, I just don't see how that could be, you know, what comes to your mind that you can't like a bean. But I've heard it before that people don't like beans. I think that they associate it with being deprived of meat. I really do think that's where that comes from, that they think that, you know, poor people that can't eat meat have to eat beans, and it's beans out of a can, and those, you know, I think it comes back to when you were a kid, or when I was a kid, it was, you know, somebody's plain old pork and beans, and they were really, really bland pork and beans, and there was this piece of bacon fat in there. That, to me, was to gross me out. But I never thought that was, you know, those that just, they weren't very tasty at all. Now when, you know, later on Bush's baked beans came out, then those were pretty good. But again, then those beans, you know, you could get vegetarian Bush's baked beans. And people say, what about vegetarian Bush's baked beans? You know, how about them? Well, they're going to have a lot of sugar at it, right? So you have to look at the ingredients. They're going to have a lot of sugar, and they're probably going to have some oil in those beans, too. I haven't really looked, but a lot of them do have oil. It makes them, you know, it changes the consistency. It changes the mouthfeel. But again, you can make a barbecue sauce pretty easy and pretty low calorie dense if you control the ingredients. And typically it's, you know, a little bit of vinegar, a little bit of tomato paste, a little bit of molasses, a little bit of smoked paprika, and you've got a sauce that's not so heavy. And you just thin it down, a little bit of mustard in there. So you make it so it's not just overwhelming. You know, my dad used to order double blue cheese when he went out and had a salad. You know, double blue cheese plus the blue cheese, the Roquefort crumbles, you know. So, I mean, tremendous. He had more fat than he had salad. But he covered his salad, you know, in dressing. It was just swimming in dressing. And a lot of people do that. And that's what you really want to get away from. It was almost like he didn't like that. He was eating the salad just because, so he had to cover it with something that tasted different and covered up the taste. We don't want to do that, and we don't want to teach our children that we have to cover up the taste with things. We actually want to learn to taste the vegetable. So I just said she can cover up the taste of those beans with some salsa, but then the idea is to back it off, back it off, back it off. You know, people learn to eat mushrooms on a pizza, and then they learn to eat mushrooms by themselves. So, you know, you have to be aware that you're just, you know, you're gradually starting to taste things. Well, if it was in something, it wasn't so bad. And then you keep backing out, and your taste buds evolve. Even if it's kind of buried, your taste buds will evolve to like that taste. I've seen people like kale after being buried in soup that they didn't know about it. So you will learn to adapt to those things. So I hope, you know, if you have people that give you the protein question, this helps out a little bit. Because, you know, if you just say just because, then, you know, people argue back and forth. And, you know, protein is, you know, animal protein is nothing more than the middle ground, the middleman. It's the easy way to get your food. That carnivore guy that's out there that talks about, you know, we get everything from animals, and that, you know, he can chase one down and eat it with his bare hands. If you've seen him, he doesn't. You know, that's absolutely ridiculous. It's cheating. If you were to go out, you know, right now and try to catch, you know, your food with your bare hands, you'd spend a lot of calories. And I just don't think, you know, so people do it the easy way. They go get cheap, you know, takeout food at a drive-in window. That's cheating. And my last note, you know, there was a football team in the middle of our state that used to train its football players by chasing rabbits. So even a rabbit is really quick. You can't catch them. And I dare this guy. It'd be good training. Be good cross training in the COVID era when you can't get to the gym to try to chase rabbits. My dog likes to chase the birds as we're, you know, we're walking in the morning, and she's not caught one yet. She's on a leash for starters, but you know, it's just not that easy. So I hope, you know, in summary, you all are upping your nutrition, upping your game. Keep in touch with people, you know, Zoom, Skype. I think we're going to start, we have started doing our nutrition classes here on Zoom. I'm doing FaceTime Live for our membership practice as well, doing some exercise. We're doing exercise videos. We have wellness challenges every month. And that we put out, you know, what to do every day, and workout routines. We have people in our practice that are you know, getting ready to train for a marathon, and they're upping their game. So we're really enjoying working with people to get them healthy, even in the times of COVID. I think the next thing that we're going to do to up the game is I'm going to start doing some, you know, running classes, you know, via Zoom or via parks and social distancing. So this is a great way to practice. I saw somebody mentioned that, you know, that there was a Medscape article, say goodbye to personal physicians, that people aren't going to want a doctor that they know their name. They're just going to be happy on logging on and getting a doctor in the box or going to a walk-in, or because, you know, the way it is now, if you go to the hospital, you have a hospitalist, and if you go to a doctor, you never get to see your doctor. You see, you know, one of the allied health persons, and they vary, and doctors vary, and everybody covers them, so nobody really cares about if anybody knows your name. Either way, you don't care if you know the doctor's name, and the doctor doesn't care if he knows your name. Well, that's not how we practice here. I know all my patients' names. I know their dog's names. I know their family. I know how many kids they have. I know when they had their first heart attack, where they were, what they were doing. I know what they're doing right now. We have a small enough membership practice that I know who's training for what, who likes what, who doesn't like things. You know, they know my name, and they know my daughter's name, and my mother's a part of our nutrition group practice, and it's a family, and I think that's the way physicians should be. That, you know, that we've taken it's got to be a personal relationship, I think, and so I'm, you know, if you're looking for a personal relationship with a physician, then I'm your person. Yeah, I might not live in your state, but again, you know, we do things with FaceTime, and I'll spend enough time speaking with you that we get to know each other, and every time you call, you'll get to talk to me, and you'll know our staff, because we've been my staff and I have been together for over 20 years, and that's the way we continue to practice. We don't push supplements, we don't push pretend things. We want to have a good relationship with our patients, our members, and we want them to be healthy. And we don't want to wait for them to get sick. We want to be healthy. We're not over testing them. We're treating them so that they stay healthy. So if you're interested in that, go to drdelaney.com, check out the website and see what we have to offer. We have online programs as well as FaceTime programs here now in the era of COVID. We can get you healthy. We can get you in shape. And love to hear from you. You can email me at jamie@drdelaney.com. And Delaney is D-U-L-A-N-E-Y, doctor spelled out, D-O-C-T-O-R. Jamie's J-A-M-I. Did that all backwards. You have to put it together. Hope you have a great weekend, and I'll speak with you next week.